that are out here that are not sitting quietly
Heather
by.
Heather McTeer, Tony, we're going to have to leave it there. National Field Director for Moms Clean Air Force and Marianne Hitt, Director of the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign. That does it for our broadcast. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 4:59. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listener members and support from Grendel's Coffee House, located at East Burnside Street and 8th Avenue in Portland. Offering organic coffee, sandwiches, and more for breakfast and lunch, Grendel's Coffee House is open daily until 6 p.m. More information on the Grendel's Facebook page and by phone at 503-595-9550. That's 503-595-9550.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Judge Torres, running January 10th to 19th at the Milagro Theater in Portland. Judge Torres is a modern-day fairy tale rooted in Salvadoran folklore. Xiomara Torres faces many obstacles in her turbulent journey crossing the border, maneuvering the U.S. foster care system, missing her family, aging out, and becoming the most recent Latinx judge in Multnomah County, Oregon. This is her story. Again, that's Judge Torres, running January 10th through 19th, weekly on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Don't leave me here a twist in the wind.
KBOO proudly co-sponsors the Portland Folk Music Society Concert Series, kicking off 2019 with Americana Music Quartet True North. The show is January 18th, 7:30 p.m. at Reedwood Friends Church in Southeast Portland. True North is fronted by award-winning singer-songwriters Kristen Granger and Dan Wetzel, and rounded out with two well-known Northwest bluegrassers, Martin Stevens and Josh Adkins. Kristen Granger has won recent awards from Telluride, Merlefest, and Kerrville Songwriting Competitions. For more information about the Portland Folk Music Society Concert Series, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Multnomah County works to establish a mental health resource center.
Ron Wyden speaks up for one Oregonian suffering from the government shutdown.
Poet Mary Oliver passes today.
And in international news, protests continue in Zimbabwe due to the nation's economic crisis. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, January 17th, 2019. I'm Rachel Hartley.
And I'm Annette Newell. In day 26 of a partial government shutdown, food assistance for millions of low-income children, seniors, and people with disabilities is in jeopardy. This includes SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or food stamps, which provides food to 40 million Americans, many of them children, disabled, and the elderly. Even children's school meals are at risk. Millions of low-income children's school meals could be affected through the National School Lunch Program, which provides about 30 million children with free or reduced-price meals. If this shutdown continues into February, it will impact these and other programs, causing more than 70 million Americans to go hungry. President Trump could choose to end the shutdown, but has chosen to hold out for his demand for some $8 billion for a border wall.
There are hundreds of thousands of federal employees going without paychecks due to the government shutdown. But for some reason, it's even more serious. Oregon Senator Ron Wyden took the Senate floor to explain how it's endangering the life of one woman.
How can a country as rich and good and strong as the United States of America, let Jasmine Toole suffer this way. She is a 30-year-old mother of two young children. She lives in Lake County, a rural community in South Central Oregon. She's a public servant, an employee of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. She has been living with an inoperable brain tumor. The cancer has caused related debilitating conditions. She is just in and out of hospital emergency rooms. Her digestive system is impaired. With the invaluable care provided by a home health worker, she takes in liquids and nutritional infusions through tubing that is plugged in to her abdomen. Because she lives in a rural area, her treatment can require long-distance travel. That's hard to deal with when you're suffering from the flu. Just imagine, Mr. President, and those paying attention to this, how hard it is with a brain tumor, a broken digestive tract, and feeding tubes attached to your body that prevent you from eating or drinking normally. She is confronting this health challenge with remarkable bravery. And I don't believe there is a single member of the United States Senate who would wish Jasmine's struggle on their very worst enemy. And then comes the government shutdown. Jasmine was due to travel to Nevada this month for treatment related to her tumor. But last week, as she was prepared to go, she was informed that her health insurance had lapsed. Initially, she thought it might be, we all know with insurance, kind of a recent hiccup, a recent problem, something that could be corrected quickly. This week, she learned it lapsed in October. October, months ago, and her insurance company told her that only her employer could fix it. Jasmine's employer is shut down. Nobody is answering the phones. Right now, Jasmine Toole is suffering, this mother of two, and is unable to determine what caused the lapse in her coverage or what can be done to get it fixed. The most immediate threat is this. Jasmine was told that her home health assistant cannot continue to help her if she doesn't have insurance. That means that within days, this 30-year-old mom won't be able to get the infusions she needs to stay alive. Now, if that isn't enough, Jasmine has been failed by the government on multiple occasions. Shortly after she went on medical leave in early 2017, she began the process of applying for disability retirement. She worked with the appropriate human resources official to prepare the paperwork to send to the Office of Personnel Management. She thought, as anybody would, that the process was underway and she would hear back soon about the results of her application. She just learned recently that the official who prepared the documents retired without sending them in. For a year and a half, while Jasmine fought cancer and was just hoping to get some positive news, her disability paperwork sat in an unused office, just sat there collecting dust. She had to travel to that office against her doctor's orders to finalize the paperwork once more and prevent a loss of benefits. But the Office of Personnel Management, that shut down too. Jasmine hasn't been able to learn where her benefits stand. Mr. President, it is too cruel already that thousands and thousands of Americans, our workers, are going without paychecks, that this shutdown is making victims of those who do public service. But consider what it's doing to this young mother of two, a woman who is currently fighting for her life.
Part of Senator Wyden's speech to members of the Senate trying to convince them to vote to reopen the government.
A new report that government inspectors released today shows the number of children forcibly separated from their parents at the border could be far higher than previously thought. The number of kids thought to have been separated under President Trump's family separation policy was estimated at more than 2,700 children, but the number of families separated is actually much higher, as the initial count did not include children separated under the policy before it was officially unveiled. The actual number of separated families is still not known, but Amnesty International has estimated that it's more than 8,000.
Just months from the end of devastating wildfire season, the government shutdown is already affecting preparations for the 2019 season. The winter months are vital for wildfire preparation, but many of those have been put on hold while many federal contractors and managers are furloughed. It's the time of the year when clearing and thinning projects to weed out flammable debris normally takes place on federal lands and federal forests. But these projects have been delayed in California, Oregon, and elsewhere. Parts of Northern California are already facing a shorter than usual preparation period due to the late November fire that ravaged the town of Paradise. A number of private contractors have received letters telling them to stop working. Training courses for command staff on fire management teams have also been canceled in Oregon, Montana, and Tennessee because instructors from federal agencies are not available, and applications for seasonal firefighting jobs are, in many cases, going unprocessed.
The nonprofit group Public Citizen spoke out today and condemned the shutdown of the main federal government website, allowing public comment on policy issues. Regulations.gov first stopped loading this morning. An error message was then posted, which showed the site had been shut down for lack of funding. Later today, a new error message appeared, which said the site would be restored, although it failed to provide any timeline on when that would be. Public Citizen spokesman David Rosen said, quote, "Anything less than a blanket comment period extension for the full duration of the shutdown means the Trump administration is cutting the public out of the regulatory process and does not take the importance of public comment seriously."
Police have identified the man a security guard killed outside of a Portland strip club on Tuesday. Eugene Farr, a Portland native, was a graduate of Jefferson High School and Mount Hood Community College. The security guard at the club, Francisco Swafford, shot him, then ran away from the scene and called police. The club where the shooting took place is the Dream On Saloon at 159th and Southeast Stark. Police are not charging Swafford, who claimed that Farr was trying to rob him. Farr, a black male, died at the hospital after the guard shot him multiple times. Portland police cannot be reached for comment.
Terry Bean, the LGBTQ rights activist, Democratic donor, and fifth-generation Oregonian, has been indicted on sexual abuse charges resulting from an alleged incident involving a minor. Bean, who co-founded the Human Rights Campaign in Washington, had a previous case resulting from the same incident dismissed by a trial judge after the victim refused to testify. Recently, a judge in Lane County decided independently to reopen the case, with Bean and the alleged victim finally seeing their day in court. The victim does not appear to have prompted the reopening of the case, and Bean's lawyer claims that his client is the victim of an extortion scheme. Yesterday, the Willamette Week reported that the victim's former lawyer in the case, Lori Davini, has been accused of stealing money from her clients in personal injury cases involving settlements. Bean's alleged victim filed a complaint recently to the Oregon State Board claiming they had not seen any of the $200,000 civil compromise settlement paid by Bean.
The Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Mary Oliver has died today, following a long battle with lymphoma. Her poetry was beloved for its deep exploration of connections between the natural and spiritual world. She was 83.
Listening to the KBOO Evening News. Glad to have you with us. Stay tuned after this newscast at 5:30 for an in-depth live report with some of the organizers of Portland's MLK Tribute, which KBOO plans to broadcast live on Monday. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, Queen Talk. Tonight's weather, a 90% chance of showers, down to an overnight low of 43. Tomorrow's weather, Friday brings more rain, especially in the afternoon, a high of 48. The rain is going to continue through the weekend, but it looks like the sun makes an appearance just in time for MLK Day on Monday. And today in history, on this date in 1893, Americans overthrew Hawaii's monarchy. A group of American sugar planters under Sanford Dole overthrew the last Hawaiian queen and established a new provincial government with Dole as president. Our quote of the day is from President Dwight Eisenhower, who gave his farewell address to the nation on this date in 1961. He stunned many people when he warned Americans about the military-industrial complex, calling it a, quote, danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite.
Multnomah County commissioners have taken the first steps toward establishing a mental health resource center in Portland. After a long search for a property, the Board of Commissioners approved a resolution to begin negotiations to use a 24,833 square foot warehouse located in Southwest Portland. The center would fill a gap not provided by existing mental health facilities, as it would provide transitional housing for people with behavioral health issues. It would also provide services during the day.
Clark County, Washington is warning of a growing measles outbreak. Here with more information is KBOO reporter Oliver Mintz-Low.
The measles outbreak in Southwest Washington has grown to 16 confirmed cases and 5 suspected cases. 13 confirmed cases are children under 10 years old, and the other 3 are all under 18. Of the confirmed cases, 14 have not been vaccinated against the disease, which is highly contagious and can be transmitted via airborne spread. Clark County is now asking all students who are not vaccinated to stay home during the incubation period, which can be anywhere from 7 to 14 days. This includes students with state-approved vaccination exemptions, which Washington currently allows for medical, philosophical, and religious reasons. Clark County has released a list of potential public exposure locations, which includes several schools in Vancouver, healthcare facilities in Vancouver and Portland, and a number of other locations, including 2 churches and Portland International Airport. Anyone with questions about measles should call their health provider or local county health department. This is Oliver Mintz-Low reporting for KBOO News.
Vice President Mike Pence's wife, Karen, might be reading a, and quote, a day in the life of Marlon Brando right now. 100 copies of comedian and talk show host John Oliver's pro-queer children's book have been sent to the school where the vice president's wife teaches art, which bans queer students, teachers, and parents. Oliver's book tells the story of a male bunny who falls in love with another male bunny. It's a parody of a book written and illustrated by Karen Pence and her daughter called, in quote, Marlon Brando's Day in the Life of the Vice President. The books were sent to the school by the Trevor Project, a nonprofit that organizes suicide prevention programs for queer youth. Trevor's project director, Amit Pally, said, in quote, we know that lesbian, gay, and bisexual youth from rejecting families are more than 8 times more likely to attempt suicide than their straight peers. We hope Emmanuel Christian School will adopt policies of inclusion for LGBTQ young people that make them feel safe, accepted, and loved.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast that's dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Indigenous people plan to march Friday in Washington, D.C. to draw attention to a number of issues facing indigenous communities around the world. Violence, the environment, and sacred site protection are among areas of concern. Those who cannot travel to Washington are showing support from their home communities. Some are hosting local events, including students at Haskell Indian Nations University. Haskell Student Senate President Lindsay Robinson helped organize a march in Lawrence, Kansas.
We're participating because it's an important issue that addresses national issues from every tribe and every place where Indigenous people live. It's outside of the United States. It's Canada. It's South America. We're advocating for missing and murdered Indigenous women, water rights, treaty rights, violations, all of these things that Native people have faced throughout all of history. And so we just think it's important that it needs to be addressed, especially with the new day and age and the change in the House and the change in the Senate. So just advocating and participating and making it known that it's not just in D.C., it's everywhere.
Students plan to meet at noon on campus. The Indigenous People's March in D.C. begins at 8 a.m. The Federation of Indian Service Employees Union is providing workers with information updates helping people apply for no-interest loans and has joined a lawsuit as the federal government partial shutdown continues in its fourth week. Sue Parton is president of the Indian Union, which represents employees in four agencies under the Interior Department serving Indian Country. They represent about 7,000 people in 22 states. Parton says they're hearing from employees being impacted by the shutdown who are on furlough or on accepted status required to work.
They are facing so much uncertainty, so much turmoil. The majority of them, I have to include myself in this group, generally live paycheck to paycheck. Missing one paycheck, which everybody did this last pay period, has really started to up the anxiety and force employees to make choices as to where they're going to get funds and then how to prioritize what they're going to spend their funds on.
The Indian Union is in partnership with the American Federation of Teachers and the American Federation of Labor and Congress of Industrial Organizations. Bureau of Indian Education employees are mostly exempt due to forward funding. The new president of the Navajo Nation says Navajo people are ready for change. Jonathan Nez took the oath of office this week, saying his administration is prepared to lead the large tribal nation. Nez credits grassroots efforts and listening to voters for helping him win the presidency.
For us, it was just down-to-earth, one-on-one discussion with the Navajo people on what their issues are. And so we sat there and listened. And sometimes it was hard to listen because the Navajo people are going through some hardships throughout the nation, but we do have the power to help ourselves, and I think we are going to rely on our teaching, our grassroots teaching, our way of life teaching to restore order here on the nation and to restore trust to our Navajo Nation government.
The inauguration was held in Fort Defiance, Arizona, for Nez, Vice President Myron Leiser, the Navajo Nation Council, and other elected Navajo officials. Leaders from North Dakota's five tribes are holding a flag ceremony Thursday afternoon in Bismarck to formally present Governor Doug Burgum tribal flags. The flags for display at the Capitol are a positive step in tribal-state relationship building, say supporters. The ceremony will include a Native Honor Guard, drum group, blessing, and cultural explanation of the flags. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Paula Yakubian, one of six female members of the Lebanese parliament, is urging fellow legislators to help change discriminatory laws that she sees as unjust against women. This is the Middle East Minute.
I'm Esti Chandler for the Middle East Minute Plus. 9 months after being voted into the Lebanese parliament as one of six female lawmakers, Paula Yakubian is urging fellow legislators to help change discriminatory laws that she sees as an injustice against women. Yakubian, a former journalist, won her seat as a civil society candidate. making her the first woman in Lebanon's parliament not aligned with any political party in the country's sectarian political system. Yacoubian sees her biggest battle as gaining nationality rights for thousands of stateless children born to Lebanese women. In Lebanon, women married to foreigners cannot pass their Lebanese nationality onto their husbands or children. Speaking to Reuters, she said, quote, "It is not only about women. It's about suffering families. They don't have a piece of paper that says you have a nationality. It is degrading," end quote. According to Lebanese law, stateless children cannot access public health care, have difficulty getting access to education, and when they are old enough, they cannot work without a permit. Additionally, there's no minimum age for marriage in Lebanon, and in some Lebanese communities, women cannot inherit or own property. Yacoubian also supports CAFA, a local campaign group that calls on Lebanon to pass a law to make 18 the minimum age for marriage, believing it's critical in order to protect young women's health and end forced marriage. Yacoubian also seeks to strengthen laws protecting women against violence, citing the 2014 domestic violence law, which fell short of criminalizing marital rape. With women gaining only 2 seats in parliament in last May's election, Yacoubian would also like to see a 33% quota to give women fair representation, noting she believes it's their right to be represented and to have equal chances. This has been the Middle East Minute Plus, a joint project of KPFK and Jewish Voice for Peace.
Vice President Mike Pence says that he believes that ISIS has been stopped and dismantled. Here's more from Rising Up Sonali.
The Environmental Protection Agency, Andrew Wheeler, faced senators on Wednesday at his confirmation hearing for the permanent position. Wheeler was the EPA's deputy administrator when Scott Pruitt, the previous EPA head, resigned in disgrace under a cloud of ethics violations and other scandals. Wheeler testified in front of the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works and was interrupted by protesters during his opening remarks.
Shut down Wheeler! Nothing is here!
Please restore order in the committee room.
Those were protesters saying shut down Wheeler, not the EPA, during Andrew Wheeler's opening testimony at Wednesday's Senate confirmation hearing. Like his predecessor, Scott Pruitt, Wheeler is antagonistic to regulations protecting the environment, even though he is vying for the position of chief environment regulator. Until just a few years ago, he was working as a lobbyist for the coal and natural gas industries. Senator Bernie Sanders aggressively questioned Wheeler during the hearing about climate change.
And if there is not unprecedented action to transform our energy system away from fossil fuel to sustainable energy and energy efficiency, there will be irreparable damage in the United States and in virtually every country on Earth. Do you agree with the scientific community?
I would not call it the greatest crisis, no, sir. I consider it a huge issue that has to be addressed globally.
That's Andrew Wheeler responding to Senator Bernie Sanders' question, saying climate change was not the greatest crisis facing us. Sanders also questioned Wheeler about California's wildfires.
Are the wildfires that we have seen in California and elsewhere, are those related to climate change, in your judgment?
There's probably some relation to climate change. I think the biggest issue with the wildfires has been forest management.
That's the biggest issue, not the droughts that we are seeing.
That is the biggest issue.
Not the droughts.
In my opinion, yes.
Okay. That's Andrew Wheeler, former coal lobbyist vying for the top job at the EPA, towing President Trump's discredited theory that poor forest management is to blame for California's wildfires. In other news, the longest federal government shutdown in history stretches on with no end in sight. Democratic Representative Raul Grijalva on Wednesday wrote to the Interior Department saying that drilling permits for the oil and gas industry should be put on hold during the shutdown. The Interior Department has apparently been changing employees' work descriptions in order to continue processing oil lease sales, seismic permits, and more. Grijalva wrote to Interior Secretary David Bernhardt saying, "One of the most striking features of the current government shutdown, brought entirely by the president's insistence on building an entirely unnecessary border wall, is the way the administration has bent over backwards to ensure that the pain of the shutdown falls only on ordinary Americans and the environment and not on the oil and gas industry." Among the hardest hit workers in the government shutdown are those working for the Transportation Security Administration, or TSA, providing security at airports and other ports of entry. TSA administrators have announced that growing numbers of TSA workers have not been showing up, opposed to the idea of being made to work without pay and stressed about their finances. Airports are having to bring in other workers to fill in their positions, and wait times for security are increasing. Meanwhile, Republican Newt Gingrich, who oversaw the nation's second longest government shutdown during his tenure as House Speaker in 1995, advised President Donald Trump to not negotiate with the Democrats to end the shutdown. He said during a CNN interview, quote, "My advice would be, why don't you schedule three rallies in three Democratic districts and have people show up? See how Democrats feel about that kind of direct pressure. He ought to start planning right now, reaching out to individual Democrats and ignoring Pelosi and Schumer," end of quote. In 1995, Gingrich was perceived by the public as being responsible for the 21-day shutdown when he was House Speaker. In other news, Vice President Mike Pence on Wednesday triumphantly announced to an annual gathering of American diplomats that the Islamic State had been defeated. He did this just hours after it was confirmed that four Americans were among the 19 killed in a suicide bombing in Manjib, Syria, a day earlier.
"Thanks to the leadership of this commander-in-chief and the courage and sacrifice of our armed forces, we're now actually able to begin to hand off the fight against ISIS in Syria to our coalition partners, and we are bringing our troops home. The caliphate has crumbled and ISIS has been defeated."
That's Vice President Mike Pence claiming the defeat of the Islamic State in Syria to a gathering of American diplomats in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday, a day after ISIS killed four Americans. According to the New York Times, it was at least the sixth major attack by the Islamic State in less than a month and was one of the deadliest days that the American-led coalition had suffered in the fight against the group.
In Zimbabwe, protests continue as an economic crisis rocks the southern African nation. The widespread protests follow the president's announcement Sunday of a 150% increase in fuel prices. In response to the protests, the government shut down internet access for 24 hours yesterday. It's restored now. Troops have arrested hundreds of protesters, and dozens are in the hospital with injuries. Doctors and teachers have started a strike over poor working conditions, and tens of thousands of other workers have joined them.
For Thursday, January 17th, 2019. Here are some of the main points again. Multnomah County works to establish a mental health resource center. Senator Ron Wyden speaks up for an Oregonian suffering from the government shutdown. And in international news, protests continue in Zimbabwe due to the nation's economic crisis. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. You can call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Annette Newell, Oliver Mintzlow, Alex Riedlander, Jenka Soderberg, Emily Gresham Beamer, and the one and only Lisa Loving. The producer is Rachel Hartley, and our engineers are Arlie Mintzlow and Mike Fataklis. The director of Evening News and Public Affairs is Rachel Hartley. A podcast and a transcript of this newscast are available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell.
And I'm Rachel Hartley. Coming up tomorrow on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's Positively Revolting. At 9, it's Veterans Watch. At 10, it's Valley Views. Then at 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. All of these KBOO programs are sponsored by member support. If you would like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
KBOO News In Depth,
where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
On Monday, our community will hold a massive celebration in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. As KBOO has for 34 years, we will be broadcasting live from the MLK Tribute Celebration all day long. And joining us right now is a man who's instrumental and vital in the MLK Tribute Celebration. Welcome, Donnie Adair. Glad to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, the theme this year is We've Come This Far. Explain the genesis of that theme and why it's important to our listeners.
Well, themes are tough. Each year we get in a room with some of the people who produce the program, and we try to come up with a theme that's meaningful, provocative, and that will help engender the spirit of the legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. And so this year we came up with We've Come This Far, because it raises the question in our mind, how far have we come? As we look at all of the great things that are happening as a result of equal opportunity efforts by a wide group of organizations and individuals in our community, locally, regionally, and nationally. You know, when we say we've come this far, for example, we'll have Joanne Hardesty, the first black city commissioner. That's how far we've come in 2019.
Right.
So it took us a long time to get there, but when we look at government in the city of Portland at the highest leadership levels, that's how far we've come mm-hmm. with African-American women so far. And so it also begs the question, what do we need to do as individuals, as organization, and as a community to go even further to accomplish that vision, that dream that Martin Luther King gave us, where we would all be judged by the content of our character and have that opportunity to reach for the stars without discrimination for a myriad of reasons.
Yeah, and other than the wonderful Joanne Hardesty's victory, what are some other highlights of the celebration this year?
Well, as usual, we involve a lot of youth in our production. And so we've got youth involved in music and as speakers and dance, you know, starting out in the first part of the program or the first quarter of the program. We've got the music program from Cesar Chavez School, American Music Program, which, you know, by the way, we're going to miss some of our people that have helped us over the years, like Thera Memory, with music programs for young people, but talented musicians like Devin Phillips are stepping up.
Nice.
And he's the director now of the American Music Program, which is winning all kinds of awards, mm-hmm. That kind of thing. So a number of the different schools, Kairos PDX, Lane School, Jefferson Dancers, a lot of heavy involvement mm-hmm. in young people in this program to help them understand and be motivated by the accomplishments of a great man.
And of course, people can listen all day long here on KBOO at 90.7 FM. We're going to be broadcasting live all the highlights from this tribute celebration. And when does it start exactly and where you're having it? Tell us about those details.
We'll be at Highland Christian Center, which is located at 7600 Northeast Gleason Street, or 76 and Gleason. We've been there a number of years now, and it's kind of a good home for the program. And we'll be simulcasting not only on KBOO, which is really the father or mother of the program, however you want to look at it, but we'll be on several cable systems, including Comcast, Xfinity, CenturyLink, Prism, and Frontier. So we have good regional coverage as far as being on television if you have one of the cable systems. And of course, we're international because the cable's on the net. So mm-hmm. we also will have our Facebook page, and you can go to worldartsfoundation.org, which is our website, for more information, and we'll have updates there. So we're kind of up to date now. We're certainly incorporating younger people into our volunteers and staff that put this program together. So we're up to date on social media. You'll find us on Twitter. You'll find us on Facebook and on our website and then on television and on radio. So, but we want people to come out live because 5,000 to 7,000 people will come through. The program is live 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. So it's a long program, but it's a great program, and it allows so many people to participate and share.
Yeah, and I think that I briefly heard you say a number of how many people you're expecting.
Can 5,000 to 7,000 over the 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. time period.
Yeah, do you think that that's because of the social media leverage that you've been having with this event?
Yes, I do, and historically,
totally.
Because we started out 4 years ago at Old Whitaker Middle School, which no longer exists. We used to be Adams High School. Then we were at Jefferson High School for many, many years, and that laid a foundation. We've been to a couple of other venues, University of Portland and some other venues, but we really have established the Highland Christian Center as a home and a base. And it's nice because, it really kind of is an atmosphere that's similar to what took place in the Civil Rights Movement. It was in the church where people got together before those marches, and they got their inspiration from people like the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, and then they went out and they marched and they exhibited love, and they brought down, these barriers of race, overt racism and that kind of thing.
Yeah, of course, this is a celebration we're talking about, but you just touched on an important point. Oregon has a troubled history when
yes,
it comes
it
to treatment of African Americans.
Yes.
How far has our community really come on civil rights?
Well, you mentioned that troubled history, and I can remember a couple of years ago, because I'm retired, but much of my career was in equal opportunity and diversity, and I chaired Portland, the City of Portland's Black History Month for almost a decade. So I love local history, and of course, a lot of people don't know that African Americans, Mexicans, and Asians were not allowed to live here or own property by constitution of the state, first by territorial law and then constitution of state, Oregon being the only state admitted to the Union with exclusionary laws and that kind of thing. Not eliminated till 1929, but now we did come before that and we did stay, but it has some of the varied history of the South. There were some lynchings, there were some negative things that took place, and there was a lot of discrimination, and there was open segregation in major cities like Portland, where you could not eat in a lot of restaurants downtown and stuff like that. So this is an opportunity to bring that history for our kids or younger people to the forefront, so they understand that people fought and people died for the freedoms that they have now, and that the struggle does continue because we're facing and continue to face discrimination.
And on top of that, what does Martin Luther King Jr.'s legacy mean to you after that?
Well, to me personally, it was like opening a door, because I started out in 1974 as a civil rights investigator for the Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries.
Wow.
Investigated cases for a couple of years and helped to start the technical assistance unit, which is still functioning today for the Bureau of Labor, back in 1976. So I grew in human resources and became a generalist, a manager, an executive. But through all of those experiences, 40 years, I shouldered responsibility for equal employment opportunities. So I've been on all sides of the fence. I've been on the enforcement side. I've been the employer representative, but I've been a community member and advocate as well. And that, so I bring all of that to this program, which we love so much. I mean, who could know that when Ken Berry asked me to MC this program 34 years ago, that I would still be doing it and still be, just committed, as many of us are. We just have so many wonderful people. And Ken Berry, our executive director, retired school administrator, was unable to be with us. Michael Grice, our founder and president of World Arts Foundation Incorporated. Kevin Berry also has taken a major part in closing our program with a segment. And throughout our program, we have these Lifetime Achievement Awards. I'm proud to say I'm co-producing that. And so we're honoring 15 people, as we've done each year. These awards have grown, and we're honoring people who have served their community in a way that enhances or keeps alive the vision and the values of the equal opportunity movement that King led. Some of those people include former Commissioner Loretta Smith, mm-hmm. former Commissioner Dan Saltzman, who has really been a great commissioner. I think, you know, health, other issues may have caused him to think about or to retire. I'll be accepting the award for him. Laverne Davis, longtime educator. Dr. Rosa Colquitt. Posthumously, Jimmy Bang Bang Walker, who had the African-American newspaper, the Clarion Defender. He had Bang Bang's Knockout Cleanser, so there was some entrepreneurship that we all remember. Mm-hmm. He used to give a party for low-income kids at Christmas time every year and gave out gifts up at Jefferson High School. You know, this, you know, a lot of efforts like that are what we're rewarding. Even in music, Calvin Walker is receiving a Lifetime Achievement Award for things that he's done. Brian Quinn, longtime counselor at Jefferson High School. Mm-hmm. We're honoring him. Mark Washington, and really the Washington family for what they've done with media through the Portland Observer and those kinds of things. So it's the breadth of the community is very multicultural, and the people that we select every year to try to touch each segment of the community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a big part of our program. And the way we do it now is we actually interview people beforehand, and we edit video vignettes, and we show the vignettes, which is a better way for them to talk about their own contributions and what's important to them, and to reflect on what we need to do going forward. And then we present them with the award.
You know, you see the Black Lives Matter signs on people's lawns mm-hmm. in Portland, and you know that people are aware of these issues. But in general, do you think that the average Portlander gets it when it comes to the civil rights struggles that still go on to this day, and how can they get more educated and really understand it?
Well, there are a number of opportunities for people in Portland to get it if they don't have it, and people like Donna Maxey have race talks, discussions open to people, and people don't get it in Portland for a number of reasons, primarily because most of the people you meet now are transplants, and so they don't know the history that you and I were just sharing mm-hmm. with people. And then as you look at even more contemporary history, the history of Vanport, Albina, yeah. Northeast Portland, the current gentrification, and how it all ties together, mm-hmm. then they would have a better understanding of Portlanders, particularly people of color in Portland, and maybe can be more sensitive to what their needs are, what the struggle has been, and how to more effectively communicate, deal with, serve, work with, etc., people who are different than they are. Because all of these things tie together. I'm so old now that I've lived so much of it. I mean, you know, a few months ago, I was a part of a class of 68 Jefferson High School, 50th reunion. And so, you know, as we look back, one of the things that was striking in that reunion party that we had when we took the pictures for grade schools,
yeah,
we had boys, we were all black except for one person, and Highland was like all black, but then mm-hmm. some of the other schools, Vereen, other schools, were more multicultural or all white. But we came together in Jefferson. Mm-hmm. You know, people always say Jefferson black school. Well, it wasn't a black school. We only had about 800 black students. It was about 2,000 students. So we were actually a minority in the school. Mm. But people would, you know, cast us as a black school. So, you know, like you say, history is important. And I know in working with the city, we provided people opportunities to find out more about these connections so that they could serve residents better with whatever program you have, whether it's transportation or water or whatever you're doing that serves the public.
Totally, you know, yeah, and you bring up a really big point of when you mentioned Jefferson High School, just like the stigmas that are put onto Black students at that high school. It's just really interesting, and thank you for bringing that up. And with that, can you explain what the Arts Foundation is and how it's involved in the celebration and how it helps youth?
Well, the World Arts Foundation was started by Michael Grice and other educators to connect schools and students with information about their communities and to catalog the contributions of African Americans and other folks and keep that history alive and to make that connection with young people. So, World Arts Foundation's primary objective is to preserve history and to share it with people. And we do it, we call it the intersection of arts and education. We do it through use of arts programs, because this program actually comes out of the beginnings was a program called From the Pulpit to the People. Herb Cawthorn, a very talented speaker, did a program, and he did the speeches of Martin Luther King and so forth. That was one of the first things that World Arts Foundation did. And this is kind of like an outgrowth of that. It was so well received. It was done in churches. It was done at KGW, actually videoed or filmed the program in those days, and you edited it over several hours. But they showed it uninterrupted on KGW Channel 8 way back when, you know, 36 years ago. So that's the foundations of World Arts Foundation. And this program is really a big part of what we do, because we're bringing so many people in the community together. And not only locally, but it has been regionally. We've had groups from Eugene, Salem, Seattle participate. And so it has become at times a regional program with the inclusion of people from those areas. So, and we also have schools coming from the outlying areas, bringing students, bringing volunteers, and so forth. So it's not just an inner city thing. We're trying to really reach out to the entire community in the city and in the region with Martin Luther King.
You know, I noticed on your Facebook description for this event, it said that now is the time more than ever for a day like this with the celebration, the music, and the culture. Why is now that time?
Well, there's a lot of hate speech and actions that are increasing over the last few years. Now, people speculate why, and I'm not going to get into the whole politics of things, but I can say, for example, we were scheduled to have Senator Ron Wyden with us, but he won't be with us because guess what? He's trying to get the government back up and running, okay? Mm-hmm. The signs of the times. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he has been on our program, Senator Merkley, the governor. A lot of different people have come over the years and shared their thoughts about Martin Luther King on this particular program. When you look at people like Senator Lou Frederick, you know, whose mom, dad marched with King and so forth, and he just lost his dad. We're sorry to hear that a couple of weeks ago. But, you know, I'm just saying there it just means so much to have so an opportunity to bring this community together and let people express what it is we need to do or what challenges are remaining for us. But also, it really starts with individual action. You know, for example, there's a young man, I can't recall his name right now, who whose life got turned around when he went to an exhibit of the Egypt and King Tut and those kinds of things. He realized that the Tut exhibit was here in OMSI. And he went to the meeting, and he was the only black person there, for all things King Tut, who was black. And they were interested in being more diverse. Well, it ended up he connected us with OMSI, and through him, the day after this program, in the evening, we're going to have 300 people viewing King Tut at the OMSI, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah. That's right. What happens. You know, he came to our program with mm-hmm. that, and mm-hmm. we were able to connect them. And so now we got another educational tool and vehicle so people can look at ancient mm-hmm. black history, which mm-hmm. is,
yeah,
you know,
and through the black perspective.
Right.
Like that
right.
gives black people leverage mm-hmm. right. when it comes to museums and art that isn't as accessible to our communities. So
right.
That's amazing. Awesome. Right. So tell us about the Victory Village Marketplace.
Oh, yes. Sunshine Dixon does an excellent job of coordinating the Victory Village, which in the Fellowship Hall will have a number of exhibits, service organization, government. We'll be selling everything from clothes to food and just a wide variety of people will be there displaying and selling their wares. Up on the stage in that Fellowship Hall, we're going to have the youth entrepreneurs will be displaying whatever things that they're selling or sharing in the community. So that's a focus this year. But, you know, you'll have city organizations like Portland City Human Resources, Fire Bureau always comes, and some other agencies from the city, Multnomah County, nonprofit organizations. You could come and register to vote. You know,
wow.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
you could
awesome.
Come and register.
Perfect.
So the Victory mm-hmm. Village is very, very important, very exciting, and it has something for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Now, you're getting lots of involvement with the volunteers, as you mentioned.
Yes.
How many folks do you think actually volunteer for this effort, for the MLK tribute?
Well, I have to say at least 200.
Wow.
Yeah,
that
because
many.
We have
stepping
38
up, huh?
people that have been meeting every Saturday. We're the core. You know, we have to have security. You know, certainly we need to escort everybody. There's somebody mm-hmm. standing at every door,
yeah.
every parking lot.
Totally.
You know, from 7 o'clock in the morning is staffed and that kind of thing, regardless of the weather, snow, rain. You know, we have really dedicated people because
yeah.
we got a lot of equipment. Some of the true professionals, mm-hmm. you know, Bobby Pallotta Productions. I mean, he does Timbers, Blazers, all these kinds of things. We have really qualified people who are bringing the images on TV and cable on radio.
Yeah.
Your team is going to be there.
We are.
Hooking it up,
yeah.
man.
Yes, we're
yeah,
so
because
excited.
It started here. You know, it started right in these studios.
That's right.
We outgrew it.
You outgrew it.
We couldn't.
I know.
We couldn't
fit
no longer
everybody.
Do it here. Right, right.
And what's cool is that Annette and I will both be there. Mm-hmm. I'll be producing. Annette will be anchoring. And we're so excited
yeah.
to just be a part.
Right.
Thank
the
you
other
for
thing
it.
We're doing yeah. That you're helping us with, and we're working on it together, is we do some interviews in the green room, video
yeah.
interviews,
mm-hmm.
because we can't get everybody on the program
yeah,
who wants to
that's
be.
A lot.
But we can get them on our website.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
We edit these interviews, and,
yeah.
and it gives our younger talent experience in doing the interviews, too.
Exactly.
Then we also send people up to you.
Mm-hmm,
so
yeah.
that you can have them talk with people live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the people I've been talking with this week
mm-hmm.
That we're hoping to get up to you include County Commissioners Jessica Vega Peterson.
Wonderful.
And County Commissioner Sushila Jayapal, which
nice.
Is the first person of Indian descent,
that's
East
right.
Indian descent,
right.
On,
yes.
on the county commission. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, that was
these
groundbreaking.
Are people that mm-hmm. we're working to get up to you, as well as other people who run nonprofit organizations and are a big part of helping people in this community.
Totally.
And so you guys can help them share what they're doing for the community and, you know, help it. You spread to other people.
Nice. Yeah, you mentioned some of the folks who are speaking at this. I know the program's mm-hmm. changed a bit, but maybe
yes.
you could touch on who people can expect to hear from.
Well, I mentioned Commissioner Joanne Hardesty. She
mm-hmm.
is a really it's just paramount that we give her this opportunity to speak. Now, she's spoken on the program before when she was a state representative, so she's not new to us, but she certainly is in a new role, and it's just historic and that kind of thing.
And she's definitely a part of the KBOO family for sure. She we're so excited to see her. Yeah, totally.
I don't know if you know this gentleman from the Native American community, a writer, a poet and storyteller, Ed Edmo.
Oh, yes. Nice.
Yes. Ed is going to be speaking.
Yeah, wonderful.
He's wonderful.
Let's see. Pedro Angleta Cordero from the school district will be speaking as well.
Okay, lovely. Nice. Well. So we'll just have like a packed day. Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Yeah. Oh, that's so exciting.
Yeah, Reverend Robert Joyner from the religious community from Bethesda Baptist Church going to be speaking. Nice. Got to have somebody from the church speaking. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you do.
Well, we're also going to be honoring Dr. Hardy.
Yes.
He's no longer with us and was the leader of this great church. And Michael Grice is going to lead a remembrance of him. It was interesting the other day when we were meeting, his son came in, and he always greets us. He was there for a leadership meeting, and he let us know that the last time that Dr. Hardy came into the church was when he gave that speech at our program last January.
I'm so sorry to say this, but we're glad to have you with us, and the KBOO team's excited to work with you again. We're
excited.
About out of time.
Okay.
But thank you so much for joining us, Donnie Adair.
Thank you for having us, and we'll see you at the MLK tribute for the 34th annual at Highland Christian Center, 11 to 6 on Monday.
Wonderful. Yay. Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll be there. Okay.
The World Arts Foundation and KBOO would like to invite you to the 34th anniversary and tribute to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. entitled We've Come This Far, Keep Alive the Dreams. On Monday, January 21st, 2019, from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center, 7600 Northeast Gleason Street. There'll be a host of civic leaders, choir,